And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
That we can, and so help us God, we will make America great again.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the No Gimmicks Podcast. I'm your host, Brady Leonard.
And I'm your producer, Jake Richards.
How you doing today, Jake?
Feeling sexy.
You look sexy, buddy.
Thanks.
Actually, you don't. You look like you're from the Sandlot. Jake has a mint green backwards ball cap and like a 1980s vinyl jacket.
It's what all the cool kids are wearing in the movies I watched last night.
So did you watch the Sandlot last night?
I did.
I'm not mad at that.
Killing themselves.
Oh, man. Wow, what a week.
Great week.
Great week.
I don't pay attention anymore, so
everything's a great
week.
Everything's a great week.
This is an awesome day.
If you don't watch CNN,
yeah, it's a
every
good day.
A good day.
Yeah. Don't read the news.
Oh, man. Just listen to our podcast. That's really all you need, guys.
Let us indoctrinate you into the no gimmicks lifestyle.
Absolutely. It's really the way to go. Forget gluten-free. Forget vegan.
You need the no gimmick.
You need the gimmick-free lifestyle.
That's right.
Guaranteed to.
I checked the box.
Make you live to 120, son.
I checked the back of every box of food I buy. I was like, is this gimmick free?
If there's gimmicks in it, I immediately throw it on the ground and urinate on it.
Yeah, same.
Mostly as just a symbolic gesture. Anyway, we had a really good guest today.
Partially, it's just a fetish.
This is weird, man.
Right on.
Thank God we already
We had a libertarian recorded. On, so yeah. We're exercising free speech to the max.
Thank goodness we already did the interview, because if we had to interview somebody, I don't know what happened after this intro.
Weird stuff.
So we had Brandon Finney. Brandon is a state representative in New Hampshire, and he was elected as a Republican and changed his party affiliation to the Libertarian Party a year into his term. And we just thought that was an interesting story, and we decided to have him on. And he's a cool dude, interesting guy, smart guy. He's actually getting a whole bunch of good shit done up in the state house in New Hampshire. So
yeah, I was actually it was a really good chat. And actually, I was thinking before we get into my favorite guitar slidey intro. What if we lived in a Marvel universe and state reps were like superheroes, and like Austin Peterson would be like, he would be like Spider-Man, and then Brandon would be like Venom, but like they were both good guys.
I don't get it, but I, what, okay.
Just forget me.
That was the worst analogy I've ever heard.
Okay.
We need an adult. Somebody needs to like throw us a rope right now and bail us out of this hole we just dug ourselves into.
I've just done so much acid today.
God, I can tell. Without further ado, State Representative Brandon Finney. All right, guys, we're here with Brandon Finney. Brandon, thanks so much for taking the time, brother.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on here today.
Absolutely. So Brandon, your story is a little unique. We had Austin Peterson on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he's a lifelong libertarian that changed his party affiliation to the GOP to run for office. And you kind of took the exact opposite path. You were elected to the New Hampshire state legislature as a Republican, and then halfway through your term, you changed your party affiliation to the LP. What was your thinking behind that, and what was the process of coming to that decision?
So I kind of got involved in politics when I came home from deployment at the end of 2015. I had kind of been paying attention to some things happening back home when I was overseas, and I was like, you know, I'd like to be involved in changing kind of how things are run, and instead of complaining about things, then you know, get involved instead. So I waited until June of 2016 to run for office, and originally I wanted to be an independent, but because of our election laws and whatnot, independents have to get some write-in votes to be in a primary, and I thought that was kind of obnoxious. So I just picked the GOP at the time to kind of get on the ballot. They had and they were the party between the two that I had the most in common with at the time.
Right.
So I campaigned, I got elected as a Republican, but I never really was, completely immersed in the GOP platform. I even told a lot of people when I was door knocking and campaigning that I have a lot of libertarian values, even putting that word on my campaign, door hangers and stuff like that. So I've always been upfront about how I feel about things, and I've been influenced by a lot of, books and other politicians, obviously, the Pauls, Rand and Ron Paul being a very influential and kind of that journey. And then as I've been in the Libertarian Party, kind of finding out, more and more, to kind of read and soak in. So it was an easy switch after I kind of learned how things in the State House in New Hampshire worked, how the NHGOP kind of runs itself, and then being a majority in the House, for the first time in a few years, they haven't been very, very good at kind of corralling their members to come to a general consensus on things. There's too many, factions that are broken up, I didn't like the leadership at the time, and then at the time that we did the state budget was kind of the last straw for me. So that was when I switched.
Gotcha. You mean a fractious GOP? Wow. How surprising is that?
I'm sure shocking.
Our listeners will, they're getting in car accidents right now, having heart attacks, listening to this podcast, hearing that. But so was there any pushback from your constituents in your district when you changed parties? Was there any, were there anybody angry with that decision, or did people kind of understand where you were coming from?
I think for the most part, you're always going to have, no matter where you live, you're always going to have people that are, completely immersed in their partisan politics. It doesn't matter who that candidate is. If they're not a Republican, if they're not a Democrat, it doesn't matter kind of what they stand for and what they say. And, unfortunately, that's kind of the thing about, politics, is that you're going to have the voters who think that way no matter what. And you're not going to be able to win every vote. There are people that are always going to vote, down ticket for the R's and then the D's. But I'm hoping that once I start campaigning again for re-election, I'll be able to talk to those people and be like, look, like, I don't want you to focus so much on the party that I'm in. I want you to see what I've been able to accomplish. And I've been able to accomplish a lot, in the last year that I've been active in my office. So I feel like I can look at my accomplishments and say, like, look what I'm fighting for. Don't focus so much about what party that I'm in. See the actions that I've made, and then choose from there if that's the kind of rep that you want to have in the State House for you. And I feel like I've proven kind of my mettle in this case. But either way, I've learned that, it doesn't matter if they agree with me or not. If I'm not in the right party for them, they're not going to vote for me. And I have to kind of, get over that in some way. So,
right.
Well, and another thing is, we all wish that people would vote with, hey, look at what I stand for. Look at what I've been able to do. Why does the party even matter if it aligns with your beliefs? But you're also going to attract a whole new set of constituents that might have not thought about voting for you, because some libertarians are just like anti-GOP, anti-Democratic Party, and right. You're going to get a whole new bunch of people.
Yeah.
Well, what's kind of funny about you saying that is that my colleagues in the State House, there are a lot of small L libertarians in the in the GOP that's kind of the main makeup of our politics up here in New Hampshire. But in saying that, there are very stubborn people, and that's not really a bad thing. I mean, they're very much convicted in their beliefs as well. But it's been a little harder to get work done with them in some ways than it is to talk to a Democrat who might have more in common with us socially. And that's kind of how they feel is people in the Democrat Party are more socially minded, and then people in the GOP are more fiscally minded. So we have to kind of play both sides to kind of make friends and get support for bills. But I've found lately that it's been easier to talk to Democrats, and it kind of pains me to say that, but they've been a a lot more friendly in some ways. But I mean, either way, you know, politics aside, I have a lot of great friends up there.
That's great. That's great, man. And, you know, for a lot of people don't realize that a state like New Hampshire has a Republican majority in the legislature. Honestly, I didn't know that until you told me that, Brandon. We think I'm in Ohio. I'm in the middle of the country. I think of New Hampshire because they have gone Democrat in the last several presidential elections. I kind of think of New Hampshire as a liberal leaning state, but I guess that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, for the first time in probably, 10 years or so, we have a Republican governor. We have Republicans, I'm in the majority in the Senate and in the House, and that's, that hasn't happened in at least a decade. And I think that's just kind of how the pendulum swings. We've had Obama the last 8 years, and, the Democrats kind of, had control during that time. And now that, Trump is in office, the pendulum has swung the other way. And so, kind of now it's kind of the red's turn to kind of see how they can govern. And so far, Chris Sununu is pretty popular, and he's done some, great things, other things that I've been publicly critical of, that I've been, kind of quoted on. For instance, so there's a bill in the House that would have established a Department of Veterans Affairs. And, being in the military, I like the idea of helping, the large per capita percentage of people that have served in this state. However, I don't like the idea of kind of consolidating all of our programs under one government agency with more bureaucracy to go through, and then having a commissioner, a political appointment on top of that. So I'm against that way of going about it. And that the bill was referred for interim study, and then the governor during his state address, pretty much said, I'm going to sign an executive order to do this. And it was like, well, we are like, as a House, are already trying to, to fix the issue, and you're, and then you're kind of going around us. I don't like it that way of governing, where if you don't get your way, then you're going to kind of do it yourself. Where you need to go through the proper, channels and let the process, kind of play itself out.
Right. I think that everybody, including, I'm sure 99% of our listeners who, agree with the separation of powers, I believe everybody agrees with you on that.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned, I want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago, that kind of the straw that broke the camel's back with you leaving the GOP was the budget, the state budget that the, Republican majority passed. I'm guessing it was something similar to the abomination of a federal budget that the GOP majority passed. And there's a lot of Republicans across the country that are looking at, the Republican Senate and House and White House and saying, why the hell are we electing these guys if they're not going to be fiscally responsible? Was that kind of what happened in New Hampshire as well?
Yeah. In 2017 was kind of my first year in office, and that was the year that we're doing our biennium. And pretty much it was a fight the entire, 6 months that were active in sessions. And, there was a faction of the GOP that kept saying, we want to keep cutting. You're not cutting any spending. And even the cuts that they had made were they really didn't have any impact. So I had a problem with a state with a population of 1.3 million people having a budget of $12 billion. That seems really ridiculous. And, having a quote unquote, fiscally conservative, politician in the, in the corner office as a governor, touting that, we're going to spend our money responsibly. And then, giving us a budget that had all these spending increases for all these, social programs. And it just seemed really antithetical to the platform that I had personally run on. And I had a meeting with the governor in June of last year and said, look, like, I'm not voting for this budget. I'm out. Like, I can't stand on my principles and tell the people that elected me that I voted for a $12 billion budget with $600 million in spending increases. Like, I'm just not going to do it. And I'm out. Like, bye.
Well, Governor Sununu ran as a fiscal conservative as well.
yeah, and then completely went back on that, which was what he's done for a couple of issues in the state as well. But I'm not going to spend, you know, time, you know, criticizing the governor. I mean, he's done some good things, but I think that we can always do better. And I'm hoping going forward, if he gets reelected in 2018, that we can kind of steer him in the, you know, in the direction of doing the right thing and not trying to put us in debt even more.
Yeah. So before we move on, I have a few more questions for you. But before we move on, what are you working on right now? Like what bills do you have on the House floor right now? And anything you've accomplished so far in your first term?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So I actually have had some you know, victories in the House. And so I'll talk about two bills, actually. So the first bill that kind of passed that I was happy about was kind of removing entertainers who, you know, play venues or whatnot in the state of New Hampshire. Right now, there's a weird rule where if you're an entertainer, like a band, and you're coming to play in a venue, that you're all of a sudden, you know, included as an employee under our, you know, the labor law in the state. It didn't make any sense. And we're one of the only states that even enforces that law. So basically, what happens is if you're a touring band and you come play in New Hampshire, you go to a venue and you want to have a drink while you're performing, that it's actually against the law.
Okay, Brandon, I'm sorry to cut you off real quick. And I want you to finish that thought, but I am the lead singer and guitar player of a touring rock and roll band, and we've played in New Hampshire quite a bit, and we have drank on stage. So thank God we did not go to jail.
Well,
I had no idea.
It's not even a penalty. There's no penalty, you know, per se against the act who's doing it. It's a penalty against the venue. They end up getting fined by the liquor commission, or they can have license suspended, or you know taken away permanently. And that's the kind of stuff I'm trying to avoid. So my bill to remove entertainers as employees and you know, pretty much restore their status as private contractors, that bill passed unanimously out of committee. The Liquor Commission actually supported it, and the House accepted it as well. So, and I do expect the Senate to accept it.
Man, Jake, I like this guy.
I think you just became Brady's like most favorite of all time House members. Like,
yeah, man. New Hampshire, you guys got one of the good guys.
Yeah,
good,
right.
Good for you.
And my you know, main goal in my first term in office is to kind of get rid of erroneous, unenforceable laws. So I've put in a few bills to kind of get rid of some old laws. And I spoke on the floor last week about a bill to get rid of a permitting requirement for like open air shows and like, you know, street performers, even though that's not like a prevalent issue in this state. The law was from like the 1850s. There's like none of these, you know, stipulations in the law that, you know, these people aren't really performing anymore. It's just not a common thing. So I was like, look, like it's an old law. We're not really enforcing it. A lot of the state agencies who look at the bill, you know, said it was fine. The committee passed it, and then I spoke on the floor, and the House ended up passing that as well. So, you know, my goal is just to get rid of old laws, streamline our government, and, you know, and make it a little better. I don't want to keep having stupid laws on the books, and while we're not even enforcing it. So I'm glad that, you know, to kind of get some victories there.
Yeah, you're just doing the Lord's work, man.
Yeah, right.
Little known fact, there's a law in the state of Ohio that's been on the books since like the mid-1800s that says it's illegal to throw a snake at somebody.
Which we found out after the facts, and well, we are kind of on the run.
After I was arrested for throwing snakes at everyone. Some drive-by snake throwing, man. I don't know.
The last thing I wanted to mention as well is that I've been very upfront, like in the effort to get cannabis legalized in New Hampshire. Our governor signed decriminalization bills a year ago, and we've also been able to expand the medical, medical cannabis program by allowing more symptoms and whatnot and ailments to be included. But he hasn't supported full legalization, so we're kind of on the forefront of doing that as well, and that's something I'm absolutely fighting for in New Hampshire.
Definitely, and especially in you know, this day and age of the opioid crisis, legalizing marijuana obviously is proven to help help people stay off of addicting drugs like that. Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's really great stuff that you guys are working on there up in New Hampshire. And I think the overwhelming majority of Americans on both sides of the aisle would agree with all of those points you just made, which is,
That's the future. I mean,
yeah. It's all common sense stuff.
Common sense. Yeah.
It's nothing too controversial there. So a couple questions, before we move on. If you, I don't know if you can answer this before I've gone to, do you see yourself seeking higher office, maybe a state Senate seat or even a congressional seat in the future?
I've been asked this in the past. I've pretty much stated.
I have to ask everybody. You know.
No. That's I totally get it. I've been asked in the past if I want to move up, and you know, I thought about it. Yeah, I mean, I really have no federal office ambitions. I think that I can be a lot more effective if I'm in the state government, or you know, in local politics. And I want to kind of keep it that way. I want to stay as small and local and focused. So I would rather stay in the state. If I do go anywhere, I'd like to be in the Senate at some point, but I need to worry about getting reelected as a rep first.
Gotcha. And do you think if you were to seek a higher office, would you do so as a member of the Libertarian Party, or could you ever see yourself coming back to the GOP? What's the ground game of the LP in New Hampshire right now? Do you think a libertarian can be elected to the state Senate or to Congress? You know, is there that infrastructure within the Libertarian Party to get somebody elected to a higher office right now?
So we're kind of in a unique position, you know, across the country as kind of being like the lighthouse for the LP. And that's right. Not just me, you know, bragging and whatnot. Like, I've seen it happen since I've been in politics. Like, the LP, you know, kind of roasting the dead in this state. And that's, you know, all thanks to Daryl Perry and a lot of people involved with that, you know, trying to get us back on solid ground again. And obviously the efforts have paid off. And we have three state reps in New Hampshire that are in the LP and doing a lot of great things. And I think that we can continue that by, you know, continuing to do the hard work and being very public. I think that with, you know, groups like the Free State Project, which I'm not actually a part of, I do get accused of it a lot, but I'm not in the Free State Project, but there are a lot of great people in that group that are trying to advance, you know, the ideas of liberty and I think that there is a chance to get more LP candidates elected, but you know, that stigma about kind of what our party stands for, the, you know, people have, you know, bad stereotypes in their mind about what our policies are. So it's a lot harder to get into a partisan office, in this party, given, you know, the stereotypes that we have to kind of get through. But I'm hoping through the example that Caleb and I are trying to set, that, you know, we'll be able to change people's minds and we can get more candidates elected. We do have congressional candidates. We have one for CD1 or CD2. I can't remember. Justin O'Donnell. I'm sure you guys know him. He's been very active and him and I are great friends. You know, we both serve on our state platform committee together, as well as, you know, Caleb and I. So we're all, you know, very involved. We always have good governor candidates to kind of keep us on the ballot. We had Max Abramson in 2016, and for 2018 we have Joletta Jarvis. So I think that we have a lot of great people in this movement in the state, and I think that we're gonna, you know, keep getting the work done.
Right. I probably agree with you on 99% of your platform. You're a small government, fiscal conservative, liberty, you know, minded person who gave up on the GOP. I believe all those things. I haven't quite given up on the GOP yet. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. In your opinion, as somebody who has left the GOP for a third party, do you think it's possible for the GOP to get back to being the party of Reagan and Goldwater and Calvin Coolidge, you know, true fiscal conservatism, the actual Liberty Party? Do you think, or are they too far gone? Have they proven that they're no longer fiscally responsible? They're no longer the party of small government. Do you think they can get back to that? Or do you think that the LP or other third parties are basically the only, going forward, going to be the only option left?
Well, ideally, I'd like to see more than just two options anyway.
Right.
I think the voters, you know, to get rid of voter apathy, we need to kind of give people a viable option. And if they're always stuck in that two-party, you know, duopoly, they're not going to have any hope of getting out of it.
Right.
And given how not just the GOP, but you know, the other party, I think that there's a long way to go, you know, for politics in this country in general. And I don't think it's fair to say that one party has to shape up over another. I mean, the whole system is kind of effed up, to be honest. And,
oh yeah, yeah.
And
absolutely.
I've always, you know, kind of told people, if you really want to have change, don't worry about, you know, your partisan affiliation. You know, kind of get involved in your community, get involved in your state politics. I think that the parties aren't all the same in every state. I would say that the NHGOP is probably better than in a state like, you know, Connecticut or something, you know, or like. You know, New York, where they don't have a voice in those states. Well, we do in New Hampshire. So I think that there's a lot that can be done to make things better for those parties here. But across our country, and you know, with the you know, strange rise of Trump and him getting elected, I think that if he doesn't get, you know, reelected in 2020, I mean, they're gonna have a long way to go before people can trust him to govern again, because if that's the best that they could do, then you know, I really don't have any other opinion than that. I don't hate Trump, but I think that him being their only viable candidate apparently you know, proves that they're kind of on their last leg. I don't want to see the Democrats you know, get a foothold, because there's too strong of a progressive faction in there who's trying to push all this, you know, socialism and communism and whatever else. And, you know, and unfortunately, because we have more in common with them socially, that kind of mindset is getting into the LP. And I don't want to see that further, you know, erode what we're trying to do. So I think all across the board, not just the LP, but every party, I mean, has to get better. We need better candidates and we need to get elected. So
definitely. So before we let you go, I want to talk a little bit about the gun conversation. We actually kind of met on Twitter. We were both debating with some left-wing guys on Twitter about gun rights and the Second Amendment and stuff like that. And as most Twitter debates go, it started very respectful. It was a guy that listens to the podcast, and he kept messaging us talking about, I believe he's from the UK, and he just wanted me to explain, you know, what the Second Amendment actually means and what it's for. And it was very respectful. And then a bunch of lefties kind of jumped on us. You jumped in, I jumped in. it was one of those Twitter fights. But so what's the official stance on gun rights and the Second Amendment from a libertarian lawmaker?
Real quick, it is kind of funny. Jake. It is kind of funny that somebody from the UK doesn't understand the Second Amendment. Seeing as how it was written for them.
Yeah. They're on the wrong on the wrong end of the Second Amendment. Yeah. They really were.
So it's kind of funny you mentioned that, because the LPNH platform committee actually met on Saturday to kind of overhaul our entire state platform. And we actually did all of our proposed amendments in like 3 hours. There was like 18 of them. But now that it's like, you know, fresh in my mind, we you know, had the Second Amendment come up in our platform.
We have meetings longer than that about nothing. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Brandon.
So we absolutely believe that is the right of any individual to defend oneself and their property. And I think that in this state, we do an incredible job of protecting gun rights up here. You know, we get some erroneous, you know, stupid bills every now and then about, you know, trying to appeal, you know, to a certain group based on, you know, certain events in other states. But for the most part, I mean, we got constitutional carry passed up here. You don't need to get a permit from your city, you know, police chief anymore. You don't have to, you know, get a permit to open carry. I mean, you know, as long as you're not an idiot, I think that it's pretty fair that you should be able to carry a gun on you, or even a knife or anything, you know, because all you have in this world is yourself and what you own. And, you know, and I think it's important that we do what we can to protect ourselves from those who would infringe upon that. And for people that, you know, keep getting confused, the Second Amendment was written specifically to allow the population of our country to defend itself, from its own government.
Right.
And people keep forgetting that. So when I see people saying, well, a civilian, you know, they don't need a weapon that the army has. Well, absolutely, yes, that they do.
Absolutely.
And they should probably have more, because in case our government becomes tyrannical, it says it in our Constitution, you know, it says it in all of our founding documents, that the people have the right to protect, you know, themselves, from tyranny, and that tyranny comes from authoritarian, government. So, I think that to advocate restricting that right based on arbitrary, standards on, psychological health or getting a criminal conviction on something, not a felony, but something else that has no real impact. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that we need to be careful of. And I don't want to see us go down the road of the UK or Australia, where they took away all the guns. And people say that them doing that was great for the country. Well, I'm sorry, but I am more concerned about the rights of the individual over the public good. I mean, we're not a democracy. Our government is set up to be a constitutional republic, and it's not mob rule. It's not what the masses say. The masses aren't always right. So we need to make sure that individuals have the utmost right to protect themselves and their property.
Absolutely. And the founding fathers feared a direct democracy just as much as they feared a monarchy.
Leads to monarchy.
A democracy is mob rule. And, obviously nobody wants to see mass shootings. And the shooting down in Florida is absolutely tragic. 17 lives lost. It's just horrific stuff. But the biggest mass murderer in history is the state. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the states that have... Hitler, 10 million body count, the Soviet Union, something like 50 million, Mao, 80 million. I mean, if you want to talk about mass shootings, mm-hmm. the state is the biggest mass shooter in history. And the Second Amendment prevents our state from becoming tyrannical, like you said.
Absolutely.
Definitely. And unfortunately, we have to watch the news as they just... absolutely lambast ordinary gun owners for the foreseeable future until this dies down. And there is an all-out war on the Second Amendment in the media and in the Democratic Party right now. So it's we'll see what happens. Well,
every tragic event, it happened with Sandy Hook too. I mean, every time something bad happens, people always clamor for government to quote unquote do something. Well, I don't want them to do anything. I don't want them to pass any more laws. We already have a lot of stringent laws on the, on the books that are already effectively enforcing
right.
what is common sense. I mean, I keep hearing common sense, gun control, quote unquote. Well, all that is you saying that you want the government to keep guns out of the people of ordinary people that aren't doing anything wrong and who actually could help in those situations if they were there and able to stop a threat.
Absolutely.
If trying to take that away is just going to get more people killed. So I'm hoping that the attitudes will change and people will start, understanding that what they're asking for is really dumb, but it's human beings are really fallible and I don't expect them to see the light per se. So
now they'd had to have lived 250 years ago to understand. But I think there is also a lot of common sense solutions already out there and have been out there, and we need to just listen to them. But unfortunately, that's not the left's agenda. They just want the guns.
No, who was it that said, never right. let a good tragedy go to waste?
CNN, I think.
Well, Brandon, we have to let you go in a minute, but where can everybody find you online, and where can everybody read about you on your site and get involved with what you got going on?
So people can follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/Finney4StateRep. It's P-H-I-N-N-E-Y. I am on Twitter at RepBFinneyNH. And my my official site is FinneyNH.com, which I'm still in the process of updating. It's been a little while since I've updated it. But there is a link to donate to my campaign for re-election. And please stay tuned for more in the coming months. And I look forward, to continued support.
Absolutely. I encourage everybody to check Brandon out and contribute to his reelection campaign. He's definitely one of the good guys. And I hope you change your mind and hope you do end up running for Congress or something one day, man. I'm sure Washington, D.C. could use you.
Just get rid of the BMV. That's all I ask. Okay.
Well, thanks for coming on, man. We'll have to have you back soon. And everybody follow him on Twitter, follow him on Facebook. And if you haven't already, follow us on Twitter at No Gimmicks Pod. Subscribe on iTunes or SoundCloud if you haven't already. Give us a good rating and review, and we will talk to you on Thursday. No Gimmicks.